armorer flattened himself in the hut to take cover from the force as it swept over the structure. He picked himself up as it subsided and looked out of the window at the blazing hulk of the wag. So much for trying to take a Mercy prisoner. Maybe someone else was having that kind of luck. As for JB, at least he was alive. There was nothing more important than that. Ryan and Christy made their way to the well and derrick on foot, having tethered their mounts in their rostered positions. Both moved swiftly on foot, keeping a watch for each other as they approached the site. Christy was sure that the saboteurs were at a safe distance, as her hair flowed wild and free, not curling to her neck in the manner it adopted when there was danger present. So she knew instinctively that the approaching footsteps, light and almost inaudible on the still night air, were Ryan's.
Good to see you get here, lover.
Yeah, and with time to spare, I'd say. There's no sign of anything going down yet.
When they come, how the hell do we take one alive to nail Baron Silas?
I don't know. In the middle of a firefight, it's not going to be easy to just stop one of the Colarts and say, "Excuse me, would you mind coming with us?" Guess we just gotta pray and maybe hope that one of the others can get us a mercy.
Not much of a hope, is it?
Ryan shook his head.
I reckon we might just have to battle our way out of this, like every other fire-blasted situation.
At least we're ready for it.
Ryan pointed out the two areas of the wellhead where there were hiding places. One was the small blockhouse used to house the main valves and stopcocks for the wellhead pumps, where JB and Jack had previously encountered saboteurs, and the other was in the heart of the derrick itself, over the hole where the main shaft of the pump would fit when it was restored. A smaller test borehole stood to one side of this, and the casing around it would provide cover for the one-eyed man to use in the event of a firefight, which was inevitable. The two companions took their positions and waited. They didn't have long to wait before the distant roar of the wag engines became audible. As with all the companions, they were able to hear the change in pitch and harmony of the engines as they veered off toward their differing destinations, and were able to pick out the sound of one individual wag as it moved toward them. From his position on the derrick, Ryan was unable to see the wag until it was upon them, but Christy had been able to observe its approach and identified it as yet another of the jeeps that the saboteur party seemed to favor. She could tell that it had three occupants, a driver and two passengers, one of whom was holding what looked like a Heckler & Koch G-12 caseless rifle. Christy waited in the blockhouse, her Smith & Wesson 38 in hand. She was sheltered in the shadows cast around the doorway, but had enough of herself showing to be able to get a good view of the outside. The occupants of the wag climbed out. They were brisk and businesslike, but not hurrying. Men who knew exactly what they were doing, and that they had but a little time in which to do it. The driver of the wag was short and fairly stout. He looked powerful but not too fast, and carried a snub-nosed hand blaster that could have been anything in this light. The second man was taller, but just as broad. He had long dark hair that, silhouetted in the dim light, made him appear to have no neck. He looked very powerful, as his torso tapered to a tight waist. He would be quick. But it was the third occupant of the wag that took Christie's breath away. She got a clear view of him as he moved across toward the derrick in the moonlight, suddenly becoming illuminated as he moved across patches of shadow and into the light. There was no mistaking the Stetson hat, snakeskin boots, and rangy figure. Although distracted by the surprise of seeing the Baron, Christy soon switched her attention back to the two men by the wag. They were unloading a cache of Plasex, and also something that could be timing devices, although in the poor light it was difficult for Christy to tell. The Baron was moving over toward Ryan, so it was up to her to take these two out. The taller, more muscled saboteur would be the first one chilled, but there was no doubt in her mind that she would take them both out. Ryan had to keep Baron Silas alive, as he was the best chance they had of proving their own innocence in the bedlam that was bound to erupt. The two saboteurs were now hunched over the Plasex and timers, the taller one holding a lamp that illuminated the work the fatter man was involved in. He was manipulating the wires of the timing devices, rigging up a bomb. Christy knew she would have to strike soon, and so she drew a bead. Her finger tightened on the trigger as she squeezed gently but firmly, then stopped suddenly. Baron Silas Hunter walked back into her field of vision, stopping in front of the two saboteurs and blocking her shot. There was no way she was going to risk taking out the Baron. Ryan stood behind the cover of the borehole shaft, the Sig Sauer in his hand. His amazement at seeing the Baron walk toward him had lasted only a moment. It was incredible that Silas would risk everything by going on one of his own sabotage missions, even if it did confirm for Ryan that the Baron was indeed behind it all. It had to mean that this night's attack was the last gasp by Silas to stop the project going any further. Why was something that Ryan would have liked to know, but ultimately that was unimportant. The only thing that mattered now was capturing Silas alive and keeping him that way. As Ryan shifted his Steyr SSG-70 across his back, Silas suddenly stopped in his tracks, causing the one-eyed man to also freeze. Was he aware of Ryan's presence? Silas turned and walked back toward the wag, and Ryan cursed to himself as the Baron passed out of view. It would have been a whole lot easier if the Baron could have been kept separated from the other saboteurs. That sentiment was echoed by Christie as Silas bent over the other two, muttering in a voice too low to be clearly audible. He straightened, nodding as he did so, then ran across to the derrick, passing from her field of view. All yours, lover, she thought as she closed in on the two saboteurs, who were set to their task with more speed than previously. The saboteur with the lamp and the H&K had no idea what hit him. Although Christie wasn't as accurate a shot as Mildred or Jack, she was still the possessor of a keen eye. The bullet took the tall and muscular saboteur straight between the eyes, shattering his skull and the bones of his nose, driving splinters into those frontal lobes that weren't eviscerated by the hot lead of the slug. He fell backward, dropping both lamp and blaster. The fatter saboteur was momentarily stunned into shocked stillness. Christie's second shot took him at the top of the cheekbone, in the area between the ear and the eye socket. He screamed as the bone acted as a shock absorber for the slug, before shattering under the impact. It was the merest fraction of a second longer that he lived. Knowing they were dead, Christie emerged from the hut, keeping low in case Silas should have turned back. She checked the chilled saboteurs to be sure, then turned to the derrick. What she saw made her blood run cold. Ryan had lost track of the Baron when the first shot was fired. Somewhere in the shadows, Silas had disappeared. He couldn't have gone far, but he had to have realized what had happened, and he knew the wellhead better than anyone. Ryan had to be on triple red. Even so, Silas's voice from behind still shocked him.
Drop those blasters and turn around slowly, or else I'll chew you where you stand.
Ryan had no doubt that Silas had his blaster leveled at him, and so he complied, making sure to be triple slow and buy some time. The Baron had to know that there was someone else at the wellhead, but for the time being he had to focus on Ryan. Ryan just hoped that Christie would be able to do something before the Baron decided it was time for him to buy the farm.
So tell me, was Crow involved?
No. Shame he had to stumble onto what was going on, as he was an okay guy and a damn fine worker. That I do regret, if I'm honest.
I regret that too.
He wanted to keep the conversation going as long as possible, to buy time for himself and for Christie to try to attack. Silas would be less likely to hear her approach if he was busy talking.
I don't get it. Why do you want to destroy the well?
Won't. Hell, the last thing I wanted was to destroy it.
Then why are you doing that very thing?
I don't have any choice. I spent years searching for a well. Years. There was part of my father, too. When I found this one, I couldn't believe that it was still operable. The test drilling found that there were sizable deposits. Well, that's how it seemed.
How it seemed?
Ryan was trying desperately to see if Christie was in view anywhere, trying desperately to keep Silas talking.
I guess some old deposits have been trapped by rock shifts, making big enough pools to drill into. But soon after we started work here, it became clear that there wasn't anything really left of the well. And those deposits soon dried up.
Shit. That's one beauty to explain to the other Barons.
Explain? After all the jack and supplies they've pumped into this? They figured that they own me, and they'd take it out of my ass. So I had to delay the project somehow, until I had enough jack and an escape route to make a run for it.
And now you have it.
And the perfect setup. Well, you getting the blame for tonight's disaster. Seb, you are too clever. Which is why I'm gonna have to chill you.
Go ahead. It isn't gonna help you.
Silas leveled his blaster.
You're one strange fucker, Cutter. But I guess that don't matter anymore.
It was then that Christie leapt from the shadows. She didn't want to fire at Silas with Ryan so close, So instead, she threw herself forward and took the Baron from one side, driving into his ribs with her shoulder, and using her incredibly strong arms to grab at his blaster hand and force it up. Silas fired harmlessly into the air, then dropped the blaster as the nerves deadened in his fingers. The force with which Christie hit the Baron propelled them both across the edge of the borehole for the main